There we go. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the BAM podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. Here today, we the chuckling fellow next to me
completely startled him.
Is Christopher McLaughlin.
Did the internet scare you there for a bit?
The internet scares me often, only occasionally.
Ah, okay. Podcast,
but yeah.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Welcome. Yes. I am Professor Christopher McLaughlin, the creative pit boss at Ghost Show Press.
And we are during the 1 month of the year when Chris's icon is especially germane. So good to have you on, Chris.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The lovely Ghost Show Press icon by the lovely and talented Deborah Ungerman, one of my favorite layout people.
Cool. And directly beneath us is RPG superstar, luminary, Darren Watt. Thanks. How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing all right. Delighted to be back. I think this is my fourth time on the show. So
you should be getting a hat and a beer cozy.
Oh, hey. Fancy schmancy.
If you make it to 10, you get a snuggie.
So. I get a little card, a little punch card kind of thing, so everybody can keep track.
Exactly.
Turn it in.
Yeah, your seventh is just like a small Diet Coke.
Sure.
Stick with it; it's better.
I'll take it. You know.
Man, if you catch us during pledge week, you get a tote bag.
Right. Exactly.
Indeed. And Darren's on today. We got a bunch of things to talk about first. Let's talk about your podcast first, because there's a lot of wacky stuff in the world of comic books, as we often delve into on this podcast. And Darren talks about that all over on Explain This Comic Guys, which you can find explainthis.podbean.com, where Darren, tell our listeners and viewers all about what you guys do there.
What it is, it's myself and my co-host, Stephen Tasker. And what we do is we take some weird element of comic book history and kind of like dive in and explain why it is the way it is. So we talk about publishing companies and their histories, why DC and Marvel are the way they are, and what happened to other publishers along the way. Or we may take a character and study that character, study that hero or villain or whatever. We've done, you know, like in-depth looks at Supergirl as a character, for example, just to, you know, like understand why she is the way she is. Or we may take a creator. We've done bits on Jack Kirby. We've done pieces on Siegel and Schuster and their fight with DC over the rights to Superman and that sort of thing. So it's like we take a topic, basically, and, you know, just kind of drill down into it for 45 minutes or so.
Okay, cool, cool. Now, we talked to you guys just before you launched. You get 10 podcasts now, so you guys are...
We're 10 episodes in. Yeah, we just passed our milestone 10th episode, so...
All right, cool. And also, if people want to check out your Patreon, patreon.com, explain this comic guys, and where they can help support
you. Where you can back us. We also have a Discord so that people can come in and suggest topics and that sort of thing, or, you know, debate with us about whatever it is we just posted, that sort of thing.
Do you get a lot of debates going on in Discord?
We get a few. We get a few. It's the same five guys over and over again, right? So it's like we aren't at the point now where we've got a lot of patrons we didn't already know. So they are, you know, they've kind of like staked their claim to our Discord already.
Well, you know, you've got a decent number of patrons. You've got like more than four or five.
And for I think we have 13, something like that.
Yeah, I mean when you're in this small podcast. Pond like we are, that's those are pretty good numbers.
Yeah, we're doing all right. It's we're almost 4 months in, I guess, right? With it's 10 bi-weekly episodes, so we're, I guess, almost 5 months in.
Time goes fast in these quarantine days,
right? Exactly. Well, you know, the first couple, we were genuinely had no idea if it would go past that. We were literally just sort of testing it out to see whether or not we hated doing this, because we've been threatening people with this for a long time. People were like, you know, I've listened to you talk about comic book history in a bar. Why don't you actually try to make some money doing that or something? And so, you know, Tasker and I kind of like took it as a challenge, and we found ourselves with some extra free time on our hands this summer, thanks to not being able to go anywhere. So we gave it a shot. And by two or three episodes in, we were like, OK, I don't know if this is going to work for anybody else, but we don't hate this. Right. So, you know, let's just keep tuning in and doing it. The choke point isn't even us, because you can just put a microphone on me and Tasker and we'll talk all day long. I think we're 12 or 13 episodes ahead of what's actually been posted. The problem is how long it takes them to get edited to get them on the air. So,
yeah, post-production is the real bear.
Right. So. And we're terrible at things like that, right? Our mic discipline is awful, and we're just, you know, we're better than we started. The first couple of episodes are still are already a little painful to listen to, but
it's gotten easier as time went on. Just as far, I mean, the technology doing it today. I started podcasting like I don't want to say how long ago, but it used to be a lot more complicated in terms of post production. The tools have gotten better, but
absolutely, cool. Absolutely.
Speaking of your projects, in addition to your podcast, and I have to apologize, I wasn't aware that you did a convention. Apparently, you've been doing this for a little while. Metatopia?
I've been a consultant for the Double Exposure group, which puts on 4 shows a year. Okay. This one is, of the 4 of them, is my baby, though, right? This is the one I love the most because I was, you know, a co-founder with this. And Metatopia is the joke explanation of what it is that it's summer camp for game designers. It's basically a convention that kind of like turns the concept of conventions on its head. It's not for players. It's not for fans. They're welcome to come. We're delighted to have them. But this is a convention that is put on for professionals, for professional game designers, or people who want to become professional game designers. There's an extensive panel and seminar track that's going to have over 100 hours of stuff coming up on the, you know, for this coming episode, the coming event. That is all just sort of like education, both in game design topics and how to function as a business topics, right? Like we have lawyers, we have distributors, we have printers and that sort of thing who come on to talk about, you know, like how to work with them, right? We have artists come in and talk about how to hire artists and how to like, you know, build. So it's everything that you need to kind of go into the business of game design professionally. It's also a playtest convention. The playtesting system, obviously, this time has had to change from our usual live operation. But we're working with the Double Exposure group and their Envoy Gateway, which is a website where you can do online playtesting. So that's, you know, will be linked to you know, the main page where most of the events are happening.
Okay, cool. So I've got your URL up here as a banner on the page. Mm-hmm. If I'm a game designer listening to this podcast, I'm thinking, hey, that sounds like...
You got to get there. You got to be here.
So go to this website, and exactly do I sign up?
Registration button is at the bottom of the screen that you're looking at there. That's okay. After that massive list you can see of all the guests that we actually have.
Registration is free for both professionals and non-professionals. Registration is free.
Yep.
Okay, we'll be open from now until Sunday, November 8th. Okay, cool.
Right. The actual, the first events of the show start on the 1st mm-hmm. of November. The actual kind of like full-on program begins the 5th. So it's the 5th to the 8th are like the big events. But there are, not only are we having a few live events before that, but we've been recording our panels for the last 8 years, I guess. And so from the 1st to the 4th, we'll be broadcasting on one of our Twitch channels just 24 hours a day, historical panels that we've run over the previous 8 years. So you can also catch up on the history of everything that we've done at the show. So,
If I were to ask you, is there a particular panel or a handful of panels you would recommend from the previous sessions?
Completely depends on, you know, what it is that you come from. I mean, you know, we've had a tremendous guest list historically. But this year, most of all, I'm more excited about this list than I have been for anyone that we've done previously, because we don't have to get these people all to New Jersey to make this happen anymore. Right. You know, that was always the worst part of doing this is like, okay, it's the greatest show, you know, in the industry, but unfortunately you have to come to New Jersey in November. You know, so the fact that we now have, you know, like access, global access to a whole bunch of guests that we've never been able to get there before. We have an even better than usual lineup of panels and seminars and events to see for this. The prof is going to be a guest on a couple of these with us that I've, you know, invited. We've wanted him there for a while and have not been able to work out a way to get him to New Jersey. So doing it this way, making lemonade out of the lemons that the plague has brought us.
I have been more than willing to go to New Jersey. The problem has been doing it in November with bosses right. that frown on me taking time off to tend to my other career.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah.
I thought there were some warrants still out in the Garden State for you, Chris.
Well, back when I was Civil War reenacted, every time I had to go, you know, like across the Mason-Dixon, my friends kidded me, like, oh, passport issues?
Right, like, yeah, oh, exactly. Geez. Exactly.
Yeah, traveling with historical reenactment stuff can be fun, especially at airports.
You should totally see Morristown anyway, though, for it, because Morristown is like the home of Revolutionary War reenactments.
Oh,
right? I mean, Morristown is where Washington, yes, wintered, right? It's where the in fact, you can go down the street from the hotel that we're in and find the ballroom from Hamilton where Alexander meets Eliza is literally right down the street from us.
I can't say no to history.
Right. So it's a combination of it's this fabulous combination of, like, you know, military reenactment history and Broadway nerds. Right. Simultaneously in the same town. It's beautiful.
So. Oh, well, I got to get to work on that digital replacement for me.
Okay. We'll get you up there. So,
oh, awesome. Love that.
I was just working this morning on a panel on IP that I am doing. That's basically on translating non-game intellectual property into a game, right? Like the challenges of doing that and satisfying fan bases and that sort of thing. And our panel is going to be, besides myself, it's going to have Jim Lauder, Robin Laws, Scott Woodard, and Daryl Andrews. That's right. Like, if that's, you know, yeah, that's an all-star cast right there talking about
that's
that.
That's a panel of heavy hitters right there.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting subject, because it seems like about every fourth conversation I have with the game designer these days is, holy shit, do you see what they licensed?
Yeah. Yes. Right.
Because, I mean, there's games coming out now for properties. I'm like, well, that show was canceled 30 years ago. Right? Okay. I guess someone wants to make a game about it. That's cool.
Because it's a more reliable floor, right? Like, if it's something has an audience, you know the minimum that you're going to sell, you know?
Things have pleasantly changed from the days of, you know, when a company getting a license was like the last thing they ever did.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, it's still, you know, like a minefield of things that can go wrong. But the reliability of, you know, like the cash potential for it just makes it, you know, much easier to as an investment, right? So
yeah, I was peripherally involved with the Marvel superhero role-playing game licensed property. I did a few small bits for the never published Cosmic Event book, so I can there's a lot of as you say, many hurdles and obstacles to doing it right and to making
that was
holders happy.
That was a particularly fraught one too, the relationship with Marvel, as I recall. So
I was just on the creative side. I just heard whispers and rumors occasionally. So
sure,
you're more about it than I do. But
I've worked with Cam on other stuff, so I know what he went through with that.
Cam is good people.
He's fabulous people. Yes.
Was the fraught relationship with Marvel or with Disney?
Actually, it predated Disney happened while it was going on, right? But that wasn't really the problem. The problem was Marvel's kind of like mental understanding of what a game was for and what it should be expected to do, right? Marvel had no awareness, and within their own kind of like department did not understand that fans were going to want to use this material to create new stories, right? They had it in their heads. No, this absolutely seriously, they had it in their heads that role-playing games were to retell stories from the comics and let you be in them. Right. So everything that they published, everything that they put out for the early stuff had to be tied to a specific, relatively recent Marvel storyline.
Oh.
Right. Because they assumed that this was a game in which you replayed famous Marvel comics. Right. And the idea that you would want to create your own character was baffling to them. And the idea that you would want to take these characters and have them do things they hadn't already done in the comic was utterly baffling to them.
Can we get Jeff Grubb into translate, please?
Right, exactly, yeah. And Cam did his best to try to explain to them, you know, like what this was, and got, you know, he had some success, but not as much as he hoped, you know, in getting their heads around this. So
it's been interesting. The last, I want to say 3 or 4 years, you've seen some shows, what's the one face show on Amazon Prime with the guy who played Legolas, Carnival Row, where they did like a 30-page RPG pretty much strictly as a promotional deal before that came out. And then Wendy's had, I don't know if you can call that a licensed, as that's more of an in-house promotional item, but
sure.
Altered Carbon, their RPG. Well, that was more of a straight-up RPG as opposed to a promotional, but it seems like especially when I see, you know, Hasbro just licensed a raft of IPs. I want to say Power Rangers, Transformers, a couple others. It almost seems like someone woke up and said, "This is great advertising for us."
Absolutely.
As a gamer, I'm excited to see. As a publisher, I'm like, oh, this can't be good for the industry, but maybe I'm too cynical about that.
Well, you know, I agree that it does. It has the possibility of kind of like choking off new independent, you know, work. But I haven't really seen that happen yet. And on the other hand, licenses like that coming in as a general rule are a cash infusion into the industry, which is something we, you know, as a group pretty much always need. Right. So it's, you know, there is a trade off there. I mean, I'm talking about having done this with a range of licenses myself. I mean, I've worked on Doctor Who, I've worked on Star Trek, I've worked on, you know, it's always been here, right? But the broad new range of things that could be licensed or that are even interested in discussing license is actually kind of more open than it's ever been, because it used to be the same five properties that we were all fighting over, right? Like somebody would, you know, like blow all of their cash on a Star Trek game and then there'd be another Star Trek game 2 years later, right? It would just be, you know, because Star Trek was an obvious choice, right? You know?
Well, it still is, but
sure.
I tend to think of Star Wars when I think of properties that have been had the treatment a few times, I might say. So you've done... what would be your favorite license to work on, if you don't mind me asking?
I did Trek just for love, right? I did Star Trek just for love. It's, you know, it's not a system that I, you know, was that interested in. And I didn't do any extensive work, but I just wanted, you know, I wanted eight-year-old me. I wanted to say, oh, I've worked on Star Trek, right? This is a, you know, and it was great fun to do. I was way more involved and did a lot more stuff for Doctor Who, and that was probably the one that was the most fun to actually work on. I'm a big fan of the system. I'm a big fan of Cubicle 7. They were a delight to work with, and I would, you know, jump at the chance to work with them again. Unfortunately, they are not currently using their Doctor Who license. So
I've heard a lot of good things about that company.
Yes, they are all good people.
So.
Which is not to say Modiphius is not. They're also lovely people. I just, you know, that the what they were doing with Trek was not the direction that I wanted it to go. So,
fair enough. Every once in a while, I look at some of these licenses, and I'm like, you know, if I were a smarter man, I would go make a list of all the favorite canceled TV shows and cartoons from when I was a kid, and see if I can shop around and make a Space 1999 RPG or Thunder of the Barbarian.
Right. Yeah. So, is that your dream one, Space 1999?
I loved that show so much when I was a kid. I don't know if it's especially gameable.
Yeah.
Oh, it's extremely gameable. It's just, you know, how it's just, you know, getting the, you know, your 8-person audience to pony up the bucks.
Right. Well, that's the problem, right? Like my dream license to have would be Blake 7. Right. Blake 7. That's
our dream.
Exactly. But there's no, it would never sell. It would never make any money whatsoever. Yeah. Which is a shame. And once again, it kind of depends, you know, it depends on who it is that you wind up working with, right? I mean, famously, George and his team, when they first got the Buffy license, right, the people working on Buffy the Vampire Slayer had no idea how to value that, right? And most of the time, it's the, you know, it's the game designers, it's the publishers or whatever, who, if they are inexperienced and don't really know what's going on, and like, you know, take a financial bath on a deal they didn't understand. With the Buffy one, famously, George cut a fabulously good deal on them, right? And wound up with a license much cheaper than he expected to, or than, like, you know, compared to anything else that they had. And so for several years, Buffy just printed cash, for the game company that had the license, right? It was, you know, it was underpriced compared to everything. So, I mean, if you can find one of those, if you can find a property that either doesn't know what that sort of thing is worth or doesn't really care, you know, and is just happy to, you know, have their name out on something again, sure, then it's totally worth your time.
I remember reading an interview with Josh Whedon talking about licensing for Buffy, and he was like, you know, I had to draw a line on quality control. So I just quit looking at stuff after a while. I mean,
sure.
I know the Buffy novels are and suddenly Buffy realized abortion was wrong and the whole thing was found by vampires. And I don't care because I'm making TV shows. So you guys can do what you need to with that license. And I don't know, maybe that was part of that. Maybe it wasn't. But
yeah, well, that's, you know, again, George did a fabulous job with those books. The Buffy line of products were quite strong, I thought. But they were famously underpriced on what it was that he, you know, was able to produce. So
the perception I have, and it's probably wrong, but it seems like an awful lot of it is about the negotiations.
Yeah.
Before anything gets published, it determines the you know, whether these are a success or not so much a success for the publishers involved.
Right. I think that's a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that all comes down to how do you negotiate? How good are you with talking to people? What are your soft skills like? What are your business skills like? That's probably and that's the kind of stuff that people can learn about Metatopia.
Right, so, right, you know. Exactly. See, nice callback. That was good.
I was trying.
Right. When I was the president of Hero, Steve Long obviously was my partner for it, and Steve had worked for both Decipher and Last Unicorn on their Star Trek games. And when the Star Trek license was kind of like being bruited about again, as it, you know, like the what was going to happen to it post Last Unicorn, we considered making we went through the process, right? Like we put together a whole proposal for Star Trek and everything to do it with the Hero system. Unfortunately, we were not really able to complete that because that's when Andy Matthews died. And so like a chunk of our team went away, and basically just to keep the company running, we did not have time to work on any other kind of like side projects for a while that was happening. Oh. And it was the Star Trek proposal basically that died in doing that. But going through that process was really interesting until, you know, tragedy hit us. So,
yeah, you know, there's not a month that goes by that I don't think about him. What a great, great guy he was.
Oh, Andy was the best.
I went actually digging through the archives at the New Gamers Order listserv looking for some obscure thing that I had posted like 15 years ago. And the way it's set up, you got to go through all the crosstalk.
Right.
And it was just, you know, and oh my God, so many warm memories of like, you know, daily emails from Andy about this and that. And it was like having him back for a little while. It was pretty wonderful.
That's wonderful. That's great. Yeah. When he died, that kicked the slats out of that company. It really did. I mean, we kept going for several years after it, but you know, it suddenly seemed a lot less fun.
Mm.
Well, hey, speaking of, you know, I don't have a good transition. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Well,
Chris, you had a project you wanted to hint at a little bit, right? They'll give us teasers, or am I making that too much of an awkward transition for that to be possible?
Well, it is October. It's the season for horror and scares and good fun. I know I'm having a great time enjoying Alamo Draft House's, you know, dismembering the Alamo, catching up on some classic horror films. Definitely the season for that sort of thing. Yeah. Oh, they ran the 1922 Nosferatu Saturday night on a big screen. With an original avant-garde music store and like score and like tinted and everything. Oh, fantastic! Well, we're hoping the next couple of weeks to be able to give the good folks more details about this. But January 2021 will be the next Ghost Show Press Kickstarter, and it will be for something that will be full of good scares, and it will be the first step in my envision of what I want GSP to be. My goal for that has always been that it would be my jam band. It would be me and the people that I want to invite to jam with me, people that I want to create with because I like their work. I like them as people, and to try to break in some new people who I think might be valuable contributors to this industry, trying to pay it forward. Because anybody who knows the road that I followed to get into this industry knows I used up like all my luck and like 6-7 other people's worth of luck. So I've always tried to pay that forward. I mean, seriously, right. The guy who owned my comic and game store started his own game company, and I just went up to him and said, "Hey, do you need writers?" And that was it. Right. And, you know, and when you know, it'd be Shane Hensley and Deadlands. So yes. I so much luck. So trying to pay that a little bit forward. But
I sympathize. We have it's a running joke that like nobody, you know, could duplicate the path that we took to get Hero to go, right? Of course, the sheer amount of like actual crimes that needed to happen and other completely preposterous events that like wound up with me in charge of that company, but just could not be duplicated by anybody else. So it's like, how did you break into the industry? Well, let me tell you.
And folks, he's not kidding when he says actual crimes. We're talking like international crimes.
Actual international crimes, yes.
Not by Darren or Steve or anybody.
not by anybody who is still with the company by the time that we actually went live with our first product.
Yes, yes indeed. Any yes,
law
indeed.
Enforcement personnel watching this podcast.
Right, yeah.
Please do not investigate us.
He's not allowed back in the country. The guy that we're talking about, he got deported and they stopped him at the border. So
he's the Mounties problem now.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So,
want to know a whole lot more, and it seems like the conversation would take up like another hour and a half.
Buy me a drink in the bar afterwards. I'll be delighted to tell you the story of how Hero Games came together.
But January 2021 Kickstarter, me and a list of creators, which it would blow your mind. That's part of the reason I can't talk about it, because this list of creators would cause heads to explode all across our troubled land. So I got to keep this to myself for a while.
But one of them is me. So
yes. Spoiler alert.
I'm already signed up.
Yes, and we are proud. We're proud and honored to have Darren aboard, because everything gets better when Darren is associated with it.
Aww.
Okay. Well, do you have a mailing list, or should I just send folks to your Facebook page to keep abreast of this?
Yes. Everything right now is being routed through Facebook, because I'm too weak for Twitter. I would get Darwin'd out of Twitter so fast. I cry too easily.
Fair.
It's you ever go to a party, you just like, I'm gonna go and say hi to this one dude and then get out. That's Twitter every day. You just come in, say your one thing to your one dude and leave. Don't worry about anyone else is talking about. Don't get involved in those side chatter arguments. Just go, because it's happier that way.
Sure.
I tell this story too often on the podcast, but the one bookshelf crew was out at a con. I want to say it was Origins, and while they were all away from the computers, some tiny publisher invented a story that she had been censored and that her game had been deleted. And she doctored some screenshots to make it look like that. And she posted this on Twitter. And within like minutes, there were dozens of people just screaming at one bookshelf in Giant RPG about how they were bastards and fascists. And none of it was true. And no one actually waited for proof to show up. They just
got the
pitch. So that's Twitter. So it's... maybe you're better off not going to Twitter.
Is what we're saying, right?
Yeah. No way. Have you
considered Instagram or something like that? Maybe.
Well, it's possibly, but I've only had a phone with a decent camera for like less than a year. So
right,
the notion of being able to take photos that doesn't look like the Patterson Bigfoot film, I'm still trying to grapple with that realization.
Completely. I frankly go back to the old one. It's completely on brand for you. It should be Instagrams of blurry photos of monsters only. That's pretty much what your Instagram should be, right?
There is a huge audience for cryptids out there, Chris.
Right? Seriously.
God. And, oh God, what a title. Ghost Show Press presents Last Known Photos.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Eric Bloat Game has put out a very successful OSR game this year about cryptids, and it was a big hit, huge Kickstarter, and he was getting hate mail from fans, or at least cryptids fans, weeks after, because the conceit of the book was that this is an actual manual from the FBI unit or whoever who investigates cryptids, and so there are lots of redactions in there.
Before I worked in the game industry, I worked in regular publishing. We did real books. And one of the companies I worked for was Publishers Group West during the time that they were Mark Lane's publisher. All of the JFK assassination books and that sort of thing. So we had a fabulous, fabulous pile of submissions that would come in, that were from like, you know, Bigfoot hunters and that sort of thing, who would send us their manuscripts in the hope that we would publish them, since we were, you know, like the one of the primary conspiracy theory publishers at the time. And just going through our junk pile on a monthly basis or something like that, we saw some of the most wonderful like literally on like construction paper with like brass brads holding it together, and then like people's photographs, like literally stapled to the page. they'd be like, you know, this picture should go here, right? And it'd be some like terrible picture of Bigfoot in the forest, something like that, you know. And they would literally have just like sent a little, you know, their Kodak picture or whatever, and have like stapled it to the page on like a page of like purple, you know, construction paper. And we would have just like a box of these to go through, right? It was fascinating. Oh. The guy who was the publisher was completely crazy too for this. He was, he was constantly under the impression that like the CIA had the place bugged, and so he would like talk into the lamps and stuff, you know, just to like let them know that he knew that they were there. Couldn't fool him. So
it seems like you get some interest. I mean, even like you say, mainstream publishing. I used to work in newspapers, and I could tell you stories.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
What I brought to Hero when we came together was I had a pretty good idea how books got made, right? So I could actually be the one talking to printers and that sort of thing. I'd worked in other books, so
it's amazing. I was talking to Owen Stevens about that, or he had a blog post not too long. He was like, you know, it's weird how everyone who gets involved in making RPG books, there's just a tiny fraction who actually understand layout and pre-press and how print runs work and the whole thing. So
It's an industry built on dreams, unfortunately, most of the time run by dreamers.
Yep.
And if they have
all of the business skills that you would expect from somebody who thinks that this is a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. If they have a business plan at all, it looks like an underwear gnome scheme.
But once again, if you'd like to get some more business knowledge, Metatopia 2020.
Go to Metatopia and we will disabuse you of some of these ideas. Yes, exactly.
Yes. And if anyone is particularly interested in tracking me down, I'll be showing up on Sunday, November the 8th at 2 p.m. for Grow Your RPG Brand. Hopefully mine will be bigger by then, so I'll have a lot to talk about. And then and you got to love a con that will schedule schedule things around the 4 o'clock Dolphins Cardinals game. But after that game, I'll be back at 6:30 and it'll be, hey, me and Darren at 6:30 talking about how to start a business as a game designer 101.
That's right. New business, new company. Yes.
Well, I certainly have that going for me.
I've got 5 or 6 I think I'm going to have. Unfortunately, the schedule has not gone live yet. The schedule will go live, I believe, on Wednesday.
Okay, so just 48 hours.
At which point you will be able to see all, you know, 100 plus hours of stuff that we're doing for the show. So,
okay, cool. I'll definitely be checking it out. Encourage listeners and viewers to do the same. You can see us the URL there on the banner. For those of you listening to us on iTunes, that'll be www.dexposure.com/m20.html. You can check that out. Or if you just actually Google Metatopia 2020, you guys have pretty good.
It'll be there. Yep. Yeah,
right.
And take a look. That front page is a list of all of the guests that we have for events here. And as you can see, it goes on forever. We have, you know, a couple of hundred of the biggest names in games, both RPG, board game, card game, pretty much anything analog, anything tabletop.
Yeah, this is like the closing credits of a movie. This is everybody.
Right? Yeah, that's everybody.
There's Jody Black from Pinnacle.
Yeah, sure.
Jason Walters, I know him.
Yep.
Oh, Hal Mangold, we know Hal.
Yeah. Yep.
James Gates, cool. Yeah.
Hal has been several times. Hal's one of the people we can get to come to New Jersey for it. So he's actually been on site a few times. Jason, I think, has been 2 or 3 times over the last 8 or 10 years. But we're getting in people, like I said, Justin Achille, right? Like, we can't get him to come from England to go to, you know, New Jersey, but he's here to do, you know, he's here to talk about transmedia with us at the show. That's a fabulous, fabulous get, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. And Bradley McDivitt, I actually work with Brad. So,
well, there you go. Yep.
Yeah, this is, well, just a cast of thousands. This is a beautiful thing. So,
absolutely.
All right, cool.
Ken Hyde, Robin Laws, a bunch of great people here.
It is the that's entertainment of gaming.
Right. There you go.
Nice. All right, well, hey, we're getting to that part of the show. We should probably wrap things up. Any closing thoughts, Chris or Darren? Chris and Darren.
Oh, well, I'm honored to be a part of the show and honored to be working with you two fine gentlemen on future projects. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And even though 2020 has been a brutal year, hopefully Metatopia will be the start of a new age of peace, prosperity, and happiness for us all. At least I like to think so.
That's a lovely thought for it. I mean, the whole thing that we were doing with Metatopia was trying to make lemonade out of all the crappy lemons that we've gotten this year. and try to turn it into something that, you know, and it's gone so well that I think, you know, going forward, we've changed what Metatopia will be like, right? Like, I mean, that's, there will always be this online portion of it now, you know, going forward, because this one seems to be working so well.
But once you're
of course, check with me again on the 9th and let's see how it came out. But, you know, once we chucked it all out the window at that point. It's like, oh, what a nightmare this was. We're not doing that again.
Yeah, I think for cons and education, we're all learning just what's possible on the internet these days.
Right.
Well, and I know just in the day job, there's so much that we've been able to do better just going from home, not having to deal with daily commutes and travel and logistics and whatnot.
We learned a bunch from watching Gen Con try to pull this off, right? Like, I mean, Gen Con, I thought the Gen Con online this summer was a pretty strong program considering how kind of seat of the pants it was. But there was also a sense of like when we were watching them of like, you know, well, that was cool, but we can do better. Right. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, like spite is always like a good motivator, you know, sort of thing. So I think as soon as like Vinny closed the, you know, closed his screen from Gen Con, was just like, okay, that's where the bar is set right now. Let's jump way over that. So, you know,
and we can all hope that maybe next year they'll, we measure some place so we can once again do
right, yeah, and do something and actually get in person and see each other again.
Yeah, fingers crossed, knock on wood. So,
exactly,
to all our listeners and viewers, thanks for checking us out on the BAMF podcast. Darren, always a pleasure, sir.
Thanks for having me again. Love to be here.
Remember that the fifth visit is Chalupa's, so just stick
oh, hey, where's my card? A little punch.
And Mr. McLaughlin, always a pleasure to have you, sir. And we will catch you all next time on the BAMF podcast.